Welcome into First Draft. We are just 10 days away from the start of the 2024 NFL Draft, and we have 100 picks to dive into. Well, not quite 100, but that'll all make sense in just a moment as we say hello to the great Mel Kiper Jr. How are you, my friend? We made it through 100 picks together. We're going to cover some of them during the next 45 or so minutes.
I finished the weekend with the top 150 to 200 field. All the rankings are being finalized, all the late information, the pro days, all the visits are taking place, and we're trying to really isolate players. We want to move up, move down a little bit, but once you write it in pen and you file it away, there's no looking back, field. So that's where we are right now, finalizing our rankings and getting ready for what's going to start April 25th.
Yeah, Mel, my final 200 is due tomorrow. We're having this conversation on Monday. That makes Tuesday. By the way, you and I are very corporate today. Today, as we are going right from First Draft to a SportsCenter special covering the same topic that we're going to dive into. So here's what happened. Mel and I on Friday did a three-round alternating mock draft where he had all the odds, I had all the evens. We went back and forth acting as GMs for all 32 teams. We made it through the first three rounds. Of course, the Dolphins forfeited one of their third-round picks. There's only 100 picks in the first three rounds this year, Mel. We're going to go through some of the notable picks, not all the picks, because that would take more than just one show, but let's dive in just a little bit into some of the great picks. But is there anything that has changed most, just thinking sort of big picture, as far as how you view prospects right now versus how you viewed them when First Draft kind of got going on a weekly cadence back in January?
I think the big change is J.J. McCarthy soaring up to the point now where we're talking about being in that top five maybe field. And then you got Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback from Toledo. What happened? Senior Bowl week, 4-3-3 at the combine. Now he becomes at the Mid-American Conference the top cornerback coming off the board, probably in the top 10 to 15. We get a CFL corner, Quantez Stiggers, right? East-West Shrine practice, 5 interceptions at the CFL level. He could be a fourth-round draft choice, an early day three pick. So in terms of the first round, though, field. I think J.J. McCarthy, the question now, how many quarterbacks go in the first? We may see 5. We could see 6. And then certainly where we are right now with the cornerback position and a guy like Quinyon Mitchell. And then Liatu Latu. We all wonder where he would fall in. We still really don't know for sure, but the great pass rusher out of UCLA, somewhere in the middle of the first round, more than likely.
All right, Mel, I'll ask this question sort of for selfish purposes because it'll help me, but I also think there are some people that might be curious about your process. You've been studying these players basically since the end of the 2023 NFL draft, nearly 12 months ago. 9 days out or 10 days out from the NFL draft, are you still grinding the tape continuously on players, or is much more of the energy over the next 10 days taking all the information you've processed and just sort of running through it once more and making sure that players align on your big board, how you saw them when you're watching them on film, and then also kind of gathering tidbits from around the league to help influence moving a guy a few spots up or a few spots down?
Yeah, you don't want to be influenced by that. You don't want to be influenced by mock drafts, really, Phil, because they're separate entities. But I think what you are influenced by is watching guys. And I like to always go backfield when the guys I moved up further than everybody else did. And see, did I do it as, I wouldn't call it a Kiper stunt, right? I would call it just trying to prove a point or maybe elevating a guy higher. So I always go back to the guys, a TJ Tampa, cornerback, Iowa State. Was what I was seeing then, what I'm seeing now, when I'm being a little bit more, I wouldn't say objective, but looking at it from a different lens, okay? Same thing with Roger Rosengarten, tackle from Washington. There's a host of players like that. Then the guys like a Blake Watson, running back at Memphis, wasn't even invited to combine, but he runs a 4-3 pro day, great career at Old Dominion, then certainly at Memphis. Memphis has had a history of producing running backs. I got him in a fifth round area. I liked him. I'd highlighted him on this First Draft podcast a couple months ago. Yeah. There were a lot of guys didn't get invited to the combine. It will be factors in this draft on day three, field. Those are the guys I go back to, but the guys I liked a little more than everybody else is the guy I study up until the bitter end.
Yeah, Mel, it's quite a process because, as you know, over the next 10 days, there are a lot of things here at ESPN that people are asking from you and hopefully me, Matt Miller and Jordan Reed, various SportsCenter appearances and TV shows and podcasts and articles, you name it. There's a lot of ground to cover. All right, before we get into the picks, Mel, is there anything that people around the league keep suggesting to you that you think could happen on night one that either you are having a hard time believing or you feel like, you know, no one's really talking about that. We should keep our eyes on it.
You know, I think the offensive lineman, the name that comes up all the time is Amarius Mims from Georgia. And I'm going to be really anxious, and it's going to be fun to see how far up he goes on the board. Or does he drop to the late first to say the Baltimore Ravens? I think Amarius Mims, when you hear a name come up a lot, Field, and he only started 8 games in his career, but he's got a ton of talent. He played really well in the games he did play. He's the kind of guy I think I'm going to be keeping a close eye on. He could get up there in the mid-first round and to maybe instead of the late first where we're thinking he could go. So Amarius Mims is going to be fun to watch and see where he comes off the board.
In my most recent mock draft, which was April 3rd, I had him going 24th to the 49ers in a trade-up. He probably needs some seasoning, so it might be good for Amarius Mims to land somewhere where they don't need him to start, especially if he ends up moving to left tackle right away. My final mock draft comes out the day of the draft. We'll see how high Amarius Mims winds up landing in that one. Now, we're going to get started here on the picks when we come back. We're going to start to dive into the most notable picks, including the only trade-up that we executed in the first 10 selections. More on the other side here on First Draft. All right, back here on First Draft, Mel Kiper Jr., I am Field Yates, and for those that missed it in the first portion of the show, we did a 3-round mock draft alternating picks. Mel had all the odds. I had all the evens, 1 through 100. We made it, Mel. Let's begin at pick number 5, and you had the odds, and you executed a trade. Tell us what happened at pick number 5.
Well, I had the Minnesota Vikings moving up to get J.J. McCarthy, and J.J. McCarthy has been red hot. You say, what's the difference between J.J. and some of the other quarterbacks? Well, 27-1 record, right? He didn't need to really carry the team because he didn't have to, but if he did have to, he showed maybe he could have done that, right? So you look at the ability here, the escape, the athleticism that he shows, the accuracy on the move. So he didn't have a lot of opportunities in games. When he did field, he had to make them count. He couldn't have a misfire, right? He couldn't have a play that went awry. He had to deliver, and he did with his arm and his legs. The competitiveness that he shows, the desire to excel that he shows, the leadership, all that, the confidence, it all, the swag, he has that swagger. All those things are why he's kind of the it guy. He's kind of the guy to trend it up higher than our ratings suggested. So that's why I suggested the trade of Minnesota, who got at the 11th and 23rd pick, to move up and secure a quarterback who may fall to them at 11, but he may not. So it's going to be how much do they view J.J. McCarthy as a franchise quarterback that we have to have. We cannot lose him, Field. If they feel they have to have him and they can't settle for a Michael Penix Jr. or a Bo Nix, then they are going to have to move up probably and get him. If they get lucky like the Steelers did with Ben Roethlisberger, maybe he falls in their lap. That could happen as well. And then they save all that draft capital.
Sure. Well, just a reminder, they're at 11 right now, but with Denver at 12 and Las Vegas at 13 right behind them, you can imagine all three of those teams will at the very least make calls up the board to see whether anybody will be willing to swap picks with them. At number 10, Mel, again, I had all the evens, you had all the odds. I did something that I did not do in my most recent mock draft. I had the Jets take an offensive lineman. I've thought about it a million different times, Mel. Do they go with Brock Bowers at pick number 10, the instant impact tight end, or do they go with Troy Fa'utanu, the versatile offensive lineman who's been a left tackle, so actually a frontside protector for Michael Penix over the past couple of seasons as a left-handed quarterback, Mel. And I thought to myself, the number 9 player on my board, a guy who at worst as a rookie, Mel, is your number 1 backup at left tackle, left guard, and right guard, because I think he can play all 4 of those spots along the offensive line. You've got a 41-year-old quarterback who was limited to 4 snaps last season. Go back and try to find an offensive line that has had consistent continuity for a prolonged period of time. It's very difficult to do, Mel. Injuries happen. Attrition takes place in the NFL, especially when your 2 offensive tackles are each 33 years old. I said, I need to protect Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers can elevate the level of play for other pass catchers more so than backup offensive linemen can keep Aaron Rodgers healthy. Give me Troy Fa'utanu in the first round here, Mel, and there's a chance he becomes a 10-year fixture in New York.
Yeah, the versatility would be phenomenal, Field, because as a 6th man, are you kidding me? You're getting a left tackle who has arm length, surprise people there, right tackle, guard. He could be like Zach Martin. We talked about him. I love the way he plays with the intensity, okay, the punch that he has and the movement that he has. I mean, he destroyed people at the line of scrimmage, and he was able to get to the second level, maintain balance, and deliver those blows. I think he's better he would be better than what they have right now in terms of the top five on that line. Now, they got to keep him healthy. We know that. And they think they're pretty good at the tackle spots. But I would make an argument to feel he's going to push his way into that starting lineup somehow, some way, if they do take him. And certainly if you say, okay, he becomes the sixth man, he's the best sixth man in the National Football League along an offensive line.
All right, number 12, Mel, is the Denver Broncos. That was also my pick as an evens pick. And if the Broncos don't take a quarterback, then I think more so than any team in the first 12 picks, they can go best player available, right? Because they have enough need, short or long term, at positions where I think there will be good players available that they can just say, hey, do we take the top-rated offensive tackle with Garrett Bowles, you know, at some point maybe aging out of being in that prime physical state of his career? Could they take a corner to play opposite of Pat Surtain with Riley Moss, their third-round pick from a year ago? Could they go edge rusher? All of those things seem to be in play for me. Instead, they took Brock Bowers, though. Kind of the unicorn of this draft, right? Because while the Broncos have several tight end investments, none of them comes anywhere close to Brock Bowers. And while the quarterback at pick 12 could be a little bit rich, Mel, if they don't go that direction, what's the best way to get the most out of Jared Stidham or a quarterback that you might take later in the draft, maybe a Spencer Rattler in the third round, is to protect that quarterback and give him weapons. And certainly Brock Bowers are given one of the great weapons in this entire class. Your thoughts on Brock Bowers going 12th overall?
Yeah, I think the Jarrett Stidham talk is maybe real. I mean, a lot of people bring it up. Hey, the Jarrett Stidham could be the guy there. Well, guess what? Yeah, they don't have a second-round pick. So moving up to get J.J. McCarthy with no second-round pick, you'd have to obviously have picks in 2025. Brock Bowers makes sense for all these teams. I got to believe if he drops a little bit, maybe Indianapolis moves up and gets him. We'll see how that happens and how whether they teams feel the need to go up and get a Brock Bowers, who everybody says, well, the value, he's a tight end, he's an everything. Thing is what he is. So I have no problem with it. I think corner is an area they could address as well, field. But it'll be interesting to see, do they have enough? Are they going to give up enough without having that two for next year's draft and a team that has a lot of holes just to go up and get a quarterback who, you know, you say, is it JJ? Would they try to go up and get, you know, or move back and maybe look at Bo Nix or Michael Penix? That's what I would do. I'm going to try to get that two back. So I'm going to move back if I like both these quarterbacks and know that one of those two will be there, maybe both, if I move back five, six, seven spots. I think that would be the best move. Not moving up for Denver, but moving back a little bit.
We're doing later on today a SportsCenter special, which will have Adam Schefter on it, Mel. It'll be great to ask Schefty about what his thoughts are on teams like the Broncos and the Vikings and the Raiders. Pick number 21, Dolphins on the clock here, Mel, and they plucked a player who could make a relatively short move from North Florida down to South Florida.
Yeah, Jared Verse is a kid who is a powerhouse. You talk about the ability, speed to power. You talk about a guy who was productive at two different schools, lower level of competition and then the highest level of competition, and consistent and reliable. Plays hard field. You always say defensive linemen take plays off. He does not take plays off. So I think Jared Verse for Miami, who has, you're talking about the Jets, right? They have two bookend tackles, right? But they're both kind of durability concerns. Same thing with Miami. Edge rushers coming off significant injuries. Jared Verse will be a guy ready to go in a division with quarterbacks and a conference with quarterbacks. You got to close. You got to finish. Okay. You got to protect your deep patrol, right? Your secondary. And Jared Verse would give Miami that guy to work in. And when those guys get healthy, you got a heck of a rotation. So I think Jared Verse to me for the Miami Dolphins looked pretty good.
Yeah. Jalen Phillips, of course, coming off that major injury that you were just referencing. Bradley Chubb also down there in Miami. You know, pass rushers, corners, offensive tackles, you can never have enough of them in the NFL. So that may be part of the calculus for Miami, who also has needs, I would argue right now, along the interior of the offensive line and the interior of the defensive line. It should be noted, both Byron Murphy, the second from Texas, and also Graham Barton, center guard from Duke, off the board by pick number 21. Mel, might have been tempting for either of those players at number 21 if they were available. Let's go to 31 here, Mel. Let's go to the final two teams in the first round, and then we'll zip through the second and the third round. The 49ers stand pat in this exercise, and they land themselves a former Pac-12 offensive tackle. Who is it?
Yeah, Jordan Morgan is a heck of a player. And I look at Jordan Morgan coming out of Arizona as a guy, left tackle. Can he be a left tackle with shorter arms than you prefer? I think he can. Because I'll tell you what, his feet, his balance, his technique and pass protection, the way he adjusts to secondary moves, the way he can project to a right tackle spot or guaranteed guard field in the NFL and play at a very high level, I would not rule out left tackle. You talk about Troy Fa'utano, the versatility. Jordan Morgan, I think, will provide that in the National Football Football League. 49ers have issues along the offensive line. They got to get a little better. Jordan Morgan now will be 2 years removed from an injury that he had a couple years ago. He said he wasn't 100% this year until mid-season field. He is going to keep getting better and better, which you saw you liked. You'd have loved it had he been healthy all year. So Jordan Morgan, great kid, gets it. He's got a lot of versatility because of his skill set. I think he would be a guy that would make a lot of sense for the 49ers. If he's still on the board, I think he could be on the board in the late first round.
Yeah, there are so many teams that are going to need tackles late in the 20s or in the mid-20s to the early 30s, I suppose. It'd be so fascinating to see exactly how this offensive tackle run takes place. Last pick in the first round, of course, for the second straight year, belongs to the Kansas City Chiefs, Mel. And what needs do they have right now? You could argue corner, you could argue offensive tackle, and you could certainly argue wide receiver, despite the fact that they still found a way in the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes needs some extra weapons, and that leads me to Xavier Leggett, the maybe one-year wonder in some people's eyes, but I look at him as a potential star from South Carolina, who had just an incredible final season with the Gamecocks. Guy had 42 catches in his first four seasons at South Carolina, Mel. Turned it into 71 catches during his final season alone. 6'1", 220 pounds. Ran a 4.39 40. I know that 6'1" is not going to blow anybody away in terms of height, but 6'1", 220, that is a grown man right there. And the run after catch skills were so apparent. If you're watching right now on YouTube, you are seeing the shot out of a cannon speed from Xavier Leggett. Excellent vertical testing also during the combine, and that showed up on film. This is a guy who made the most of his opportunities to outleap defenders. He has a kick return background as well, Mel. You and I have talked about the fact that he was once a standout special teams player. Love the football character. Love the journey here. I think this would be a home run for the Chiefs at pick number 32.
No doubt about it. When you say, well, he's a one-year guy, you know, that kick return ability that he showed, right?
Yeah.
That tells me he's a tough, tough football player, right? So that tells you when he gets the ball in his hands, you mentioned that speed. You see it, obviously, all year with Rattler getting him the ball, right? But you think a defensive back wants to take him on in the open field?
Nope.
Linebackers better bring it as well. So with that speed, that power, and that ability to be after the catch, such a dynamo, both in terms of speed and the ability to break those tackles. Xavier Leggett, if he's there in the late first, there's debate whether even will be, but he's certainly to me a first round caliber player, and certainly a guy that if he's there at 32, it won't take long for I think the Chiefs to make that call.
Yeah, I want to say one thing about the end of the first round, Mel, that I think is really fascinating. Carolina picks at 33, New England picks at 34. Both of those teams have a screaming need at wide receiver. I don't know who is going to be the team that's willing to trade out from the end of the first round, but both of those teams feel like franchises to keep an eye on at the beginning of round two, right? Because at some point, that drop-off at wide receivers is going to take place, and it might be as soon as, like, the mid-20s. Could Carolina, could New England try to find its way back up into the first round to secure a wide receiver who they think could help either Bryce Young or to-be-determined rookie quarterback for the New England Patriots? We continue to think there's a pretty decent chance it'll be Drake May. All right, coming up here, Mel and I are going to rip through round two of our back-to-back alternating top 100 mocks. That includes a trade-up for a quarterback. That's next here on First Draft.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8 SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8 SAVE. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be. All right, back here on First Draft. Mel Kiper Jr. needs no introduction. I am Field Yates. And again, Mel, I had the evens, you had the odds. So now it was my turn to project a trade. And mine was Bo Nix, who the Giants trade up for. Of course, they previously, they currently own number 47. That's a pick acquired from Seattle. They moved from 47 to 38. And in our mock, Mel, they had missed out on a quarterback at pick number 6. You and I have talked about the Giants as a trade-up team many times over. You had them moving up. I take that. You had them moving up in your last mock, right? 33 for Bo Nix?
Correct.
All right, so they pay a little bit less prohibitive of a price here to grab themselves a Bo Nix. Now, my stance on the Giants and trading up for a quarterback in the second round, Mel, is that like I would be wary about doing it for too much of a cost. But moving up from 47 to 38, Mel, is a small enough leap where the cost might not be so backbreaking that if this doesn't work out a year from now, you're going to say, we just keep investing in these quarterbacks either through draft compensation or salary, and it's just hurting us in the long term. I think this is a reasonable enough investment for a guy who had some darn good tape last season and might give the Giants an upgrade over Daniel Jones as soon as week one, especially if Jones is not healthy enough to give it a go. Your thoughts on the Bo Nix trade-up?
Yeah, the reason why I did it early second round like you did, Field, is because the late first, our team's going to trade out of there, and that's what you want to do. You want to get into the late first, that fifth-year option, right? So that's what you want to do. But will those teams want to get out of there, knowing that Leggett, a cornerback for the Baltimore Ravens, an offensive lineman for the 49ers, that the right guy's there, do those teams want to move out? I couldn't reconcile that. So that's why I didn't have a move in there. Last year, Tennessee moved up to get Will Levis from 41 to 33. That's what we're seeing here, maybe, is this scenario. Bottom line is Bo Nix, the one thing underrated about him, Field, mobility and the legs and the athleticism. Yeah. He had 20 rushing touchdowns over his 2 years at Oregon. Yeah. He is a kid that Brian Daboll, hey, forget the Josh Allen comps, they ain't any out there, but we talked about Drew Brees comps, right? Bottom line is the legs, the ability to beat a defense and frustrate a defense on third down, get that first down and get those rushing touchdowns and be that extension of that running game. He can do that. Bottom line is Bo Nix, I think, and Michael Penix Jr., both right now borderline first round draft choice.
Right, I'm going to be selfish here and take another one, go back to back, Mel, but you have three of the next four picks that we're going to highlight. But at 46, I had the Colts taking Jalen Polk, a wide receiver from Washington. And Mel, you and I have not done an episode about sort of our guys, but I've talked about Jalen Polk enough to know that for you to know that he's certainly one of my favorite players who won't go in the first round in this year's NFL draft class. He's tough. He's physical. He's got excellent body control. I have said this a few times. I'll repeat it once more. He reminds me of an old school low post player in the NBA, Mel. Not a lot of flash, not a lot of sizzle, but those big, imposing, low post players just get buckets. Jalen Polk doesn't get buckets. He just makes tough catches, and he makes defenders miss in the open field, and he drags defenders when they try to tackle him. He's good in the red zone. He was good all over the field last year for Washington, over 1,000 receiving yards. Of course, it was the Roma Dunze show and Jalen McMillan, their teammate, also a terrific player, but I will continue to be a sucker for Jalen Polk, who averaged nearly 17 yards a catch in each of the past two seasons. I might be higher on him than most, Mel, but I do love myself some Jalen Polk going to Indianapolis, and they continue to surround Anthony Richardson with as many weapons as they can. We saw last year how much promise there was from Richardson. It's a small period of time. This could be an exciting offense for a long time if they keep investing in it.
You know, your favorite is Jalen Polk. My favorite is Jalen McMillan. I love McMillan. I think he's going to be a heck of a second-round pick. Yeah, the Jalens, you love Polk. I love McMillan. I think these Husky players, we love a lot. Jack Westover, one of the more underrated players in this draft. He'll be a fifth-round pick as a heck of an H-back. But I think Jalen McMillan's a guy who's going to be a steal for somebody in the late second, early third round. I love that kid. Polk, I'm with you on him. The Huskies are going to have a ton of guys. They're going to be major entities in the early portion of this draft.
And I'll tell you what, I was out of the pro day this year, obviously, for Washington. It was like every time you turned, you're like, they have another guy. I mean, Dom Hampton, the safety, could be a fourth or fifth round pick, right? I mean, the number of players they had on that team this past year, it's no surprise they made it to the national championship. All right, so I mentioned the Giants traded from 38 to 47. That meant that the Titans, now on the clock at 47, Mel, you got this pick and you got them an edge rusher.
Got a Nadisa Isaac, Field, from Penn State, the productive Penn State Nittany Lion defensive end edge rusher who I really liked. He got after it. He's consistent. He's reliable. And I think when you look at the workout numbers, Chop Robinson certainly gets the edge over Nadisa Isaac. But when you look at the on-field performance, Nadisa Isaac, to me, the better gut player at Penn State. I like him for Tennessee. I think when you look at this conference, you look at this overall ability of these quarterbacks, finishing, you can't always cover on the back end. You can't always finish, right? You get after the quarterback. But you got to get both. You got a guy who can cover and get after the quarterback. Adisa Isaac can play the run. He brings energy on every play, which is what I love about him. On the 47th pick, the only reason he doesn't go a lot higher, and Chop's going to go maybe, 15, 20 spots higher, is because of the workout numbers. But on production, on who got the job done at the collegiate level, game in and game out, to me it was Adisa Isaac.
Yeah, 7.5 sacks last season for Adisa Isaac. And, of course, the Titans still trying to fortify that defensive front. You've got guys up front like Jeffrey Simmons and Harold Landry. You'll have more work to be done, though, for Rand Carthon, their GM, who has been very busy this offseason. I'm not sure anybody has been better at just plugging holes on the roster than Carthon so far this offseason. All right, 58 male, another player that I love, and I'm putting my hand up right now. If this player goes 10 spots earlier than this, won't surprise me. If he goes 30 spots later than this, it won't surprise me. It's Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from North Carolina State. Why would it not surprise me? He's got a major medical history, Mel. He's got both a shoulder and a knee issue on the ledger. The teams have, of course, closely monitored. But on tape alone, Peyton Wilson deserves to be one of the 35 or 40 top players drafted in this year's class. Stand-up inside linebacker also has plenty of snaps on the edge. If you're watching right now on the YouTube stream or on the ESPN2 stream, you are seeing a player whose speed translates. This is not just a fast guy on time, though. This is just a 4.43 stopwatch king. This guy showed up consistently all over the field for North Carolina State because of that speed. He can drop in coverage. He can play man coverage. He can rush the passer. He can pursue passers when his upfront workers get their job done or the secondary covers. If you go back and look at his 6 sacks last season, it felt like every single one of them was him exploding to the quarterback. I love the player. The Packers need more linebackers. Mel, I'm telling you now, though, if he goes way sooner or way later than this, won't surprise me. But 58, I feel like if the Packers are comfortable with the medicals, they're getting a steal of a player.
Yeah, a guy that they moved around. You say off ball, you put him outside. Certainly every time you watched NC State play, 11 showed up and was obviously a key entity on that defense. And he did it in all different ways. He got after the quarterback, he's intercepting passes, breaking up passes, and making a ton of tackles. I missed a few. Doesn't have great arm length. That's the one negative. Yeah. And then you mentioned the durability concerns. All that could push him, maybe, despite the great workout and despite all that productivity, could still drop into the late second round.
Yeah, Mel, I have no idea, right? Like N'Kobe Dean a couple of years ago, the linebacker from Georgia, had his great college career, then falls to the third round in the 70s. Everybody's saying, what's wrong with that guy? Maybe some of the medical stuff ended up contributing to a fall. So you just never know when guys have a serious medical issue on their resume, how it might impact their exact draft status. All right, so you're up for two here, Mel. And a player from the University of Georgia that you love goes late in the second round to the Lions. Who is it?
A playmaker. I love guys that just come up there and they'll strike you, they'll hit you, and you can do a lot with them in your defensive secondary. And there's a lot of teams in that late second round area. We'll look at Javon Bullard from Georgia. Javon Bullard is a kid who hit Marvin Harrison Jr., added a game at the end of the third quarter, or Ohio State wins that football game. Georgia went on to win a national title. Teams like Buffalo, Detroit, where I have him going, Baltimore, San Francisco could all use a Javon Bullard. Green Bay Packers, you know, I'm taking Peyton Wilson. They could certainly use a Javon Bullard, a guy that has the one word I use, and I love players who are versatile, and I love guys who are natural-born playmakers, and Javon Bullard is that guy. When the biggest stops needed to be made, he delivered at Georgia. This is a team talent-laden, but he jumped out at you, Field, despite all that great talent on both sides of the ball and on the defensive side. He finds a way to get to the football, and when he gets there, he's a throwback. He will pop you. He will hit you. And to me, Javon Bullard in a late second round, I can make an argument if you take Cooper Jagini to put him at corner, that Javon Bullard's the best safety in this draft. So to me, and the versatility he'll provide as well is going to be huge. Love this kid. I think he's going to be a nice pick in the late second round.
They have two kind of undersized ballers in that secondary, Tyke Smith and also Javon Bullard now from Georgia, that I do believe this. If you play defensive back at Georgia under Kirby Smart, who, of course, for a long time was a defensive backs coach, that immediately has my attention because you know those kids are going to be smart, well-coached, disciplined, and versatile. All those things apply to Javon Bullard. All right, a couple of spots later, Mel, you had another SEC defensive back, a guy that you believe is a fast riser during the pre-draft process. Who is it?
It's Drew Phillips from Kentucky. He didn't have any interceptions field at Kentucky,
none.
But you watched him play and you were impressed with the overall performance of Andrew Drew Phillips at Kentucky. I have him going here to the San Francisco 49ers. They need a player like this. You saw some issues they had in that secondary, in that deep patrol, but he's sticky to the receivers. He gets his hands on a lot of balls, okay? He's got the ability, I think, to be able to come into the NFL, transition quickly, which is what you're going to have if you're a team like the 49ers. I can immediately contribute, get on the field, and get the job done for you. He will tackle, he will hit, and he locates the football. He has that natural instinctive ability that you want. You see him here, turn at the right precise moment to break up the pass. I'd have liked to have seen him have 4 or 5 career interceptions field. He didn't. That's the only thing on his resume that's lacking, preventing me from moving him up a little further. He tested great. Everything, draft process, he nailed. A couple interceptions would have helped, but I have him in the late second round. Some are thinking 3rd, 4th round. I think it goes earlier than that. I love this kid in the late 2, early 3 area.
So 4.42 40 at the combine with a 42-inch vertical for Andrew Phillips. And you kind of alluded to this, Mel, but I will say this. Scouts rave about the football intelligence and character for Andrew Phillips as well. And those are the kind of traits that help a guy who had 0 career picks move up draft boards during this time of the year. All right, that gets us through the first 2 rounds. That means that we have 1 final round. For those of you that absolutely loved the end of day 2 and then the beginning of round 3, we have some names that could hear their names called around then. So coming up on the other side here on First Draft, Mel and I will dive into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 third round picks, including yet another one for the Washington Commanders, who seemingly have all the picks in the top 100. Third round mock draft reveal coming up next here on First Draft. All right, back here on First Draft, and we are now going to dive into the third round. Again, the exercise was as follows. Mel and I going back and forth for 100 picks. He had all the odds. I had all the evens. Mel, there are few teams who have a chance to influence their roster more this draft than the Washington Commanders and the Arizona Cardinals, the two teams we will talk about next. Let's begin with Washington at pick 67. What do they do?
Well, they get Jaden Daniels at 2, and you got a receiver like Roman Wilson still on the board field. I don't think he will be. I think he goes in the early to mid, I'd say maybe mid-second round here. Early be a little early. But 4.39 proved the point of what we saw is able to be translated to the NFL level. That speed, that competitiveness. Roman Wilson was the go-to guy for J.J. McCarthy, along with Colston Loveland. He was like, well, he didn't have that elite guy. Roman Wilson at the collegiate level was an elite player week in and week out field. Teams knew they had to handle him. You also had Cornelius Johnson and other guys, but this was the guy that J.J. looked to in critical moments. And when Roman had to come through, just like J.J. did, he did come through. And you see the numbers there in terms of the consistency year in and year out. Like I said, that speed he showed in terms of the combine was visual evidence. Okay, what we saw will translate to the pro level. Roman Wilson has a great attitude, great character. He plays with a chip. He wants to be great. And if he gets into that portion of early round 3, he's a steal. I don't think he will field. I think he goes, like I say, mid-second round.
You know, Mel, how much does he want to be great? He's from the state of Hawaii. And back for a month in high school, he wanted to go to a different program that had a better football team. And for a month straight, because one of his parents worked at an airline, he flew to school every day. The guy was flying across islands in Hawaii to be on a different football team. His dad eventually moved to a different island where that new school was located to make things a bit easier on the family. But that is dedication right there. That is a commute that is a whole lot more difficult than my 25 minutes from my house to Bristol, Connecticut. All right, 71, Mel, Arizona Cardinals, another team that has a ton of top 100 picks, including 2 in the first round and 3 in the first 36. They take one of your favorite players in this entire draft at pick number 71.
They do, Mo Kamara from Colorado State Field. Yeah. And I think when you look at what he was able to do for the Rams, getting off the edge and getting after the quarterback and finishing, and the intensity level he plays with field is impressive. This kid, you see the spin move there. But again, didn't matter the competition that Colorado State played. He showed up each week. Arizona needs a guy off the edge. And I thought it fit well, need for Arizona and player at this point. Now, I could see him going in the second round, but more than likely a third round pick. We don't have a lot of these guys in this draft that have the ability he's shown at Colorado State in Mo Kamara. Quick at the blocks, and he has that closing burst. And he plays with intensity, and he can also be able to stand stout against the run. And that's the one underrated part. He's not just a one-trick pony. He will be a complete player, or rotation, or a starter. He will have an immediate impact in the National Football League for an Arizona Cardinal team that needs that type of guy.
Yeah, he's an interesting evaluation, though, because he's not a long rusher, right? So many teams looking for lengthy pass rushers because of the ability to win with those physical gifts. And yet some pass rushers are just good about getting underneath, using sort of the opposite side of leverage to make life difficult for opposing offensive tackles. It certainly did not slow down Kamara this past year when he had just monster sack numbers for the Colorado State Rams. All right, pick number 76, Mel, Denver Broncos. And again, a reminder, at pick 12, they did not take a quarterback. They have no second-round pick. They took Brock Bowers at 12th overall. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Spencer Rattler could be a guy they would look at in the third round. And they looked at him. Enough to take him. 76th overall here, Mel. So Spencer Rattler's got a ton of experience, right? A five-year college player, four-year college player with significant starting experience, plus 1 year not really playing a whole lot as at Oklahoma. This kid's been through a lot, though, Mel. He has had some adversity. No two ways about that, right? He was everything going into that 2021 season, the Heisman favorite. And then Caleb Williams takes over after six games during the Red River rivalry, no less. And Rattler ends up at South Carolina, and these past 2 years have seen some highs and some lows here, Mel. But good enough out there. He has good in-pocket and some decent out-of-pocket mobility as well. I think the arm strength is good enough. The guy finished with the best completion percentage in South Carolina program history. Not dominant, Mel, but still, I think enough accuracy. I think what happened this past year was the offensive line just totally let Spencer Rattler down. And it struck me that Rattler on a team that really struggled this past year was always trying to make it up all in one play as opposed to just like taking the easy way back into the game. I'm willing to, I'm not going to say totally dismiss this past year, Mel. I think the past year, which was not dominant for Spencer Rattler, was more circumstantial than it was a true reflection of the player he is. I don't know that I would feel totally confident if he is my week one starter for the Denver Broncos, but given the options available to them right now, not a terrible outcome of pick number 76.
Yeah, Field, you asked me when we started what changed between January and now, right? How about what changed from a couple years ago to now? We were talking about Spencer Rattler maybe as a early to mid first round draft choice, okay? At Oklahoma, you know, Lincoln Riley's producing nothing but guys that go early, and of course Lincoln goes to USC, and you got Oklahoma still putting up the numbers. He goes to South Carolina, and he has games, Field, where he looked like he could be that guy, that future starting quarterback in the NFL. The inconsistency, though, decision-making, making throws that left you scratching your head at times. I look at Spencer Rattler as a roll of the dice in that third, fourth round. Hey, if he can get more consistency and you can coach him up, get in the right situation, who knows? So third, fourth round area, second round would be too high for me. The seventh, eighth, and ninth quarterback. If Rattler's at seven, beyond the top six, right? We know who they are. Michael Pratt from Tulane, Keaton Slovis from BYU would fall into that next area. So right now, I would say he's a solid seventh quarterback coming off the board. I would say more third or fourth round.
Yeah, this seems to be about the range for Spencer Rattler. We will see. Quarterbacks are often the most difficult players to place on the board because if you're desperate, you might take one a lot earlier than us draft analysts are currently forecasting. All right, Mel, we're going to keep moving here through the third round, and you have the Raiders taking a speedy running back to boost a backfield that currently is comprised of Zamir White and the recently signed Alexander Mattison.
That's a thing, Field, a neat area. And you think about Jalen Wright, one of my more underrated players in this draft. I think the running backs, if they get pushed down too far, and I had some conversations this weekend, people are like, hey, Mel, you don't like running backs at the first, but you love them from that point on. And I love Jalen Wright in the third round area. Marshawn Lloyd, USC, your guy, Field, you love him. How about Trey Benson? How about certainly when you look at other running backs in this draft, Blake Corum from Michigan. Don't forget Blake, heck of a football player. You get Blake Corum in the third round, you're going to be really happy. Jalen Wright runs through contact and he will hit the home run. You see him here. Hey, ain't much to work with there, yet he found an opening, and then all of a sudden he's off to the races. Catch the ball out of backfield. He'll block that last line of defense. He will protect that quarterback. His numbers, obviously, this year went through the roof. And when you look at what Jalen Wright can do at the pro level as a guy can be in that mix, you talk about the other backs they have. It wouldn't be just Jalen Wright, but it would be a situation where I think he could evolve into the guy. So in the third round area, I think we're going to see a lot of really good running backs present great value at that point, with Jonathan Brooks from Texas likely being the first back off the board in round two.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the exact order of those backs, as you're saying right now, Mel. Blake Corman, name not to be forgotten. I know that the physical measurables aren't going to blow anybody away, but can you imagine Blake Corum sitting in front of a team during a private meeting, Mel, teams are going to absolutely drool over the football character that Blake Corum brings to the table. All right, a few picks later, we had a trade that was projected involving Carolina. It's less important what that was and or what this pick is. It's now 83 for Carolina as part of a trade in the second round. I believe it was for Michael Penix Jr., someone moving up to get him, Mel. But they end up with a player who, depending on what you want to list him at, could be the first or second player off the board of his position, that being Ben Sinnott from Kansas State.
Yeah, Ben Sinnott, I had H-back all along, and now I'm kind of lumping him in as a tight end. He can do it all. We talk about Brock Bowers, right? He's going to go in the middle of the first round. Ben Sinnott here, you're talking about at this point in the draft field, will be a steal. I'd say almost a grand larceny pick. You're talking about a guy who belongs in the second round based on the versatility, the consistency, and how tough he plays. And think about it, field. How about how he tested? When you get a guy who produces on the field, yeah, he had a couple concentration drops every once in a while, right? That's it. Bottom line was, you could do a lot with him, just like with Bowers, and the fact he could be in the backfield, H-back, whatever you need, and you're getting him in round three. Are you kidding me? And then the test numbers were incredible. Ben Sinnott, Kansas State, do-it-all type of player on the board at this point for the Carolina Panthers. Bryce Young, I think, would really like to have him. And if he gets that far, I'll be saying his name just about every pick view if you get down this far. But he probably, I think, goes more late second, at worst, early third.
Yeah, Ben Sinnott, just to put some numbers to that testing you were referencing, Mel, 40-inch vertical. Ran a 4.6 4.40 for a guy who is a tight end slash H-back. I mean, those are some sick numbers there for any player at that position. Nearly 14 yards per catch if you combine the past two season numbers. So it's not just dink and dunk for a guy like Benson. Such a fun player to watch. An incredible story, Mel, how he ended up at Kansas State. Not exactly the kind of guy that people in Manhattan, Kansas were expecting to become a star when he entered there, but he certainly was a star by the time that he left there. All right, pick number 84, Mel. This one felt too low for this player. I was kind of surprised, but the reality for us is there were a handful of guys like Ben Sinnott who probably slid a bit lower than we anticipated. But how about Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State, the defensive tackle? Pittsburgh kind of looking at life beyond Cam Hayward, who is so good, but at some point when you're in your mid-30s, we have to talk about what the next iteration of that defensive line could look like. So Keanu Benton, their second-round pick last year, Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State this year, could just dominate. Now, just a sack and a half this past year for Michael Hall, Mel, but he's a good example of why you have to sometimes look past just the sack numbers. He is disruptive. He plays behind the line of scrimmage consistently. He's under 300 pounds, Mel, so he can get swallowed up in the running game on occasion. But if you can trade off those reps for some of the dominance that he shows as a pass rusher and as a disruptor behind the line of scrimmage, Michael Hall Jr. would be a steal at pick number 84.
You said it, field. Okay, swallowed up against the run. Bottom line is, what's this league about right now? It's about getting after the quarterback, and that inside penetration bothers quarterbacks more than anything. So I think Michael Hall Jr., for the way the game's played right now, hey, you can protect them. And if he is a liability, so be it. That ability to get into that backfield and wreak havoc is why he could go maybe second round after all said and done.
All right, Mel, so we're going to wrap things up here with one final pick for the 49ers, who, as we know, have been on the hunt for a tight end. They recently signed an offer sheet to Brock Wright, who ended up, the Lions ended up matching that offer sheet, so he stays in Detroit. But it was a reminder, they want a tight end, Mel, at some point to play behind George Kittle. I think the order in which those tight ends come off the board could be very interesting. We already had Ben Sinnott taken. How about Jared Wiley, though, a tight end from TCU, 6.061, Mel, so north of 6 feet tall, 260 pounds, and an 81-yard touchdown catch against Baylor this past season. He's legit in the open field. This guy's got some serious speed. He played three seasons at Texas and 2 years at TCU. Finished up strong for the Horned Frogs, of course, was a part of that team that made it to the national championship game a year ago. I think good enough in the open field, capable blocker, had a solid, although abbreviated week down at the Senior Bowl, Mel. I think Jared Wiley has a chance to be the second tight end off the board if you are calling Ben Sinnott an H-back. What do you think?
I'll tell you what, Field. You must have been listening to the Dari and Mel show on Saturday from 10 to 1 Eastern because Jared Wiley was on our show, Field.
Yep.
He came on our show, and guess what he said, Field? He said the guy he patterns himself after and he wants to be is George Kittle. So would he love to be with George Kittle?
Yep.
Are you kidding me? Jared Wiley was saying, and the one thing I loved, he said, hey, I'm an outdoorsman. We love outdoorsmen. They're tight end H-backs, right? Can do everything. This kid was I said, what kind of quarterback were you in high school? Jared. Yeah, I was a gunslinger. I threw it all over. But he was a tight end before that. And that air raid offense, he's throwing it. Then he goes to Texas. Didn't work out. He goes to TCU, and he's putting up numbers. You see that 81-yard touchdown where he stretched that deep middle and he was off to the races against Baylor?
Yep.
This kid's got speed. He wants to be good. He's tough as nails. I like Jared Wiley. It was a fun interview on Saturday on the Daria Mel Show. A nice kid. And he's a great kid. He gets it. And I think if he goes with George Kittle, he will be throwing a party. He's already had a party. It'll be a major league bash if he goes to the 49ers where he can be with a guy he kind of idolizes in George Kittle.
Yeah, that one certainly would be a lot of fun. Go check out the Daria Mel Show if you aren't already, every Saturday morning on ESPN Radio. Okay, so that's the first three rounds, highlighted picks. Go check out the entire piece on ESPN.com as we get ready to wrap things up here. But coming up, a few closing thoughts on maybe some lessons learned during this exercise and what we're looking forward to over the next 10 days. More First Draft coming your way in just a few moments. All right, we're back here on First Draft. Mel Kiper Jr. and Field Yates. So, Mel, if we look back on those 100 picks that we made, anything that stands out to you, maybe you wish you had done differently, that you learned along the way, the pick of mine that you hated the most, what was it that stands out to you?
Now, when you're doing these field, it's an exercise, right? You're trying to fill needs. We have our top four needs of each team, and you're trying to put guys in an area where we believe, based on our rankings, well, they'll come off the board. Yeah, for us to feel comfortable. We also don't want this thing to look out of whack. In some cases, you may say, like I did with some players, I think they might go a little bit earlier, but you never know for sure. So this is a great exercise because guess what? When the board starts flowing and teams are filling needs, guys do slip through the cracks, okay? And we mentioned some of those on this show today, Field. So this is going to happen because of that. Need-based, and that's what you have to do in this draft. You've got three or four guys bunched together. What are you doing? You're taking a guy that fills the need, right? So again, that's what allows players to get into that third, fourth, fifth round that we didn't see coming. That's what makes the draft so fascinating. That's why millions of people watch, you know, because we may think we know, but we really don't know. And we say at the when the drafts are, who are the steals? Mm. Who are the great value picks?
Yeah.
That's based on the fact that we had them ranked a lot higher, Field. That's what makes it so much fun.
Mel, I will say this, and I'm only a year into this, not even a full year, I suppose, in that full-time draft analyst role. But if there's one thing that I feel much stronger about than I did a year ago at this time, it's the idea that the drop-off point at which teams start to see players very differently happens a whole lot sooner than America realizes, right? I don't think there's anybody in the NFL that thinks that Tali Fuaga is not a first-round pick, right? Everybody sees a guy like that as one of the first 20 or so players off the board. But you get to maybe player 38, 40, Mel, and I bet the variance is a lot wider than people realize. That's just how this draft exercise works. You must know that better than anybody else, right, Mel?
That's the mixed opinions. That's what it's all about, Field. So you question things. That's what I always say, Field. You can't be right if you're afraid to be wrong. So let those opinions fly, my friend.
All right, so I think that was Mel's way of saying that, like, all right, Field, when your draft prognostications are all wrong in 10 days from right now, I won't hold it against you, rookie. You're doing it the best, at least the best that you the very best that you can. All right, great episode here of First Draft. We are back on Thursday. More from Mel. Go check out our SportsCenter special on ESPN+, plus all kinds of draft content coming your way on ESPN+. For the GOAT, the legend, Mel Kiper Jr., I'm Field Yates. We'll talk to you guys again on the next First Draft.